here. Every Sunday morning, doors open at 10:30 and begin promptly at 11. And during the week on Wednesdays, doors open at 5:30. Meeting begins 7:45. Those few hours before the meeting will find us in the library, where you will find Straight Line, Theosophical Literature, the Declaration, and other notices to familiarize yourself with that which will follow. Now hear this. The purpose is to spread, broadcast the teachings of Theosophy as recorded in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. And we restate this purpose as the policy of this lodge, its independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It's loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part inside issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim and purpose and teaching. Therefore, has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, it belongs to each and all. Please pick up one of these at the usher's table, or in the library, or at the book table, in the middle room. And we restate, always during library hours, before and after meetings, there will be a volunteer at that book table where you may purchase Straight Line Theosophical Literature at a very reasonable fee. There you may also inquire as to how the system works entirely by voluntary contributions of time, work, and generosity of freely given donations. No obligation is imposed on anyone. And those you see working are all volunteers, having stated their desire to participate, being in accord with those teachings. Now, as we stated earlier, the Sunday talk begins January 1st, 2012, New Year's resolutions. The It's all about the path of spiritual evolution. You'll find January, February, and March programs listed on this pamphlet. Now, every Wednesday night is a study class from 7:45 to 9, as we stated. And at the present time, it's In the Ocean of Theosophy by W.Q. Judge. Now, the class is open to everyone, students and visitors alike. So you see, by these few words, that it is a cooperative effort, all joining in to gain a better understanding of theosophy. In addition, for those who have computers, at the bottom you will find information on how to get online, ULT Philadelphia, and others. Since our talk this morning will be on resolutions, the chair prepared a reading. And this reading is from the writings of Robert Crosby, Universal Theosophist, or Universal Theosophy. Often, however, resolutions are made because it is proper to make them with no real expectation of keeping them. We remember them for a few days and they choke us off for a little while, and then gradually the old desires assert themselves. And we find ourselves traveling along the old way. Resolutions will never do us any good if we do not sustain them. A desire is not a condition. The mere desire will never get us anywhere. We have to maintain the desire. We have to stick to the resolution. We have to exert our will and cleave to the object of that will throughout. We can't get rid of the evil in us by thinking of it, but can we get rid of any unpleasant thing by thinking about it? For it is truly said that we are attached to anything by thinking about it. The harder we don't think about the evil things in us, the better. Think about their opposites, and the evil will not have the chance to return. Attachment is by thought, first of all. Desire exists in thought, first of all. Then follows the action. We have to have a firm basis for our thinking if we are ever going to express ourselves as we should, as spiritual beings. There's a chance for us if we understand our own natures. Then let us resolve one great thing. Resolve to know. Resolve to think right and do right. Resolve to acquire some knowledge that always has existed. The knowledge of man as a spiritual being through all his fluctuations in the realm of matter. As we rely more and more upon the self within, we begin to express and use the power which we already have. And that is far more than we imagine. We have to help ourselves by taking the suggestions already given in the teachings of theosophy, which are master's suggestions. And then, as the sustaining power of the will is held along the line in which we desire to do, more direct help comes from those elder brothers who at every hour of each day are willing and anxious to meet those clear-eyed enough to see their true destiny and noble-hearted enough to work for the great orphan, humanity.
So we're here the first meeting of the year, and it is on January 1st. So the thing utmost in many people's minds then is about making resolutions. And today we're going to be looking at resolutions in a way that most people don't think about them. And you might wonder, the overall umbrella topic for this month is the path of spiritual evolution. And why would making resolutions be part of that? How is it part of our evolution? And that the idea that it's part of spiritual evolution is another piece that most people don't think about when they're making the resolutions and how really important it is to make it in the right way. There was another student gave me this quote. It's interesting because it kind of puts forth the way most people think about resolutions, and it's from the Family Circle magazine for January of 2012. And it's a quote, "Among the 40% of Americans who make resolutions every January, 25% have broken them after 1 week, 36% after 1 month, and 54% after a half a year. But even those lousy odds are better than not trying, because people who make resolutions are still 10 times more likely to achieve their goals." But the thing is, this is, I mean, we will discuss further how the tone of this quote, the percentages are interesting, but when he says, it's better to make them and break them than not, and we will see why that is. So most people, when we get to this, to the end of the year, everybody in some way, shape, or form, whether it's just a cursory look or if it's a real examination of the past year to see how they did. How did, you know, did they check things off of things that they wanted to accomplish? But usually people look at this end of the year in a negative way, what I didn't do, what I meant to do, that kind of thing. And it is this basis, this negative basis, that a lot of the resolutions are made on. And most people are not really satisfied when they look at their lives, but there really isn't much contemplation done when they want to change anything. And some people just make resolutions because their friends are doing it. That seems to be the year that maybe I'll do it. You hear it on the news. So there's not a real sense of commitment when they make them. And most of resolutions aren't really as black and white as most people think. And we will be taking a really close look at resolutions, and there may be some different differences that some people really aren't going to be aware of that Theosophy puts forth, and especially the ramifications that happen if we don't keep those resolutions. So one question is, we will be looking at why people make resolutions and how to do it and what happens if we don't keep them. So we'll start off with why are they made at this time of the year. And, excuse me, we think that many people have heard of the Roman god Janus. That is whom January is named after. And he was also known as the god of gates, you know, the closing and the opening of gates. And he was also a two-faced god. He had an old face on one side and a young face on the other. And we're thinking of the young face looking forward into the new year, and the old face has looked in the back. And with the gate is that, you know, opening of the gate, we're going through towards the new year, and the closing of the gate having to do with we're closing the last year. And it's also an idea of how each person has a dual nature. They have hopes and fears. They have maybe a sinful side, a good side, a loving side. So, you know, in this month, January, named after Janus, we can see the duality of people. And we also hear, and we've been talking, we talked about it all last month, about that this is the birth of the sun as it reoccurs in the solstice and begins its northward course again until Easter. And at this time of the year, there is a wave of spiritual and psychic renewal. And this is an ancient idea. This isn't something that Theosophy just made up, but that in the ancient teachings, this is there. And it is also said that the ancients had used this energy in a very positive manner. And it's kind of innate in us that we want to look back over the past year and to kind of look and see how things could have been different. And it's a natural perception of occult law in our observance of this time of the year. And if anybody is, you know, follows the promptings of their inner nature and uses the strength of the earth at this time of year in order to help themselves and support their resolutions, their success, the timing of their success will probably be more successful, we think. But unfortunately, the Western thought anymore is very materialistic. They many people just are looking at things through their physical eyes and not through the inner eyes that we have that will look inward. And because of this, the seriousness of this time is completely being ignored. But Theosophy looks towards these cycles, and that's what it is. They're cycles of invisible force and power. And it is these aspects of this higher nature that we want to look towards and use when we make the resolutions. So as we said, we're looking at the ending of one cycle and the beginning of another. Theosophy puts forth that it is important for us to observe cycles of all kind. And cycles come in huge numbers of years when we're looking at manifestation and pralaya, but then we're looking at smaller cycles like spring, summer, autumn, winter. And then with humans, we're looking at waking and sleeping, being born, etc., up to dying. But we're also looking at the cycles that are in nature with the solstices and the equinoxes. So we're using, this is one of the second fundamentals, is law, when we look at cycles and karma, because karma is also involved with this. Because what we're bringing from a former life into this life, and we're reviewing that, then we can, you know, if we review it as if we're also instructed to observe and review our daily life as well. So with karma, whatever's coming to us, we do have to pay attention to, because it is of our making. But when it comes to us, we have the will in order to change how we would normally react to things. So when we're reviewing our past year, we may have overreacted in some respects. That's something that we need to own and maybe change those reactions in the future. So all that we think and act are impacted by this law of cycles and karma. But we do have the free will to act as well as we have our desires. And we'll be looking at will and desire shortly. We want to look at some definitions. One is a pledge, which is a solemn promise or undertaking. Resolution is a firm decision to resolve, to settle, or find a solution, or to decide firmly on a course of action. And a vow is a solemn promise, and these are often interchangeable. So when we decide to make a resolution and we're using these forces that are basically being given to us, we have to be careful of what we think for, because thought is also very energetic. It carries power behind it. And then if we speak it, speech even has power behind it. So it's important when we're making these resolutions that we do it in, we have to be very careful how it's phrased, and that these resolutions are coming from our innermost being. But most people don't realize that we are spiritual beings, that we have a higher nature. Mr. Judge in The Ocean talks about the powerhouse that man is, how energetic we are. So this is something that we need to use, this power that we do have. And when we are considering making a resolution, this power that goes into us goes to support the will that is making the resolution. And just a short little quote from Patanjali's: but as the soul is held to be superior to mind, it has the power to grasp and hold the latter, if we but use the will to aid it in the work, and then only the real end and purpose of mind is brought. So the whole idea with using our resolutions from the higher self is to make us closer in this union with that higher self. And there are different types of will. And we did want to just quickly read this. Every human being, according, and this is from Magazine Theosophy 51, every human being, according to Theosophical teaching, possesses an almost unlimited potentiality. Set aflame by the magic power of will, these hidden potentialities may be made to come alive and yield to man his highest hopes and aspirations. Unconsciously to himself, man calls upon his will and draws upon the potentialities of soul each and every day of his life. By the purification of desire and the dedication of one's life to the service of the soul, a man may discover the meanings of reaching his highest and most cherished dreams. For the human will, says W.Q. Judge, is all powerful. But we also know there's the saying that we use a lot in Theosophy, is behind will stands desire. So desire then, That begins with a thought. It's, you know, I want to do something. But desire is colored positive and negative as well. So when desire is going to motivate will, it has to work from the appropriate pretense. So when we're looking at making resolutions, then these higher resolutions that we're talking about in spiritual evolution, then we're looking at making it from the highest spiritual stance that we can make it. And then once this desire is settled in a higher plane, then it can motivate will to its best course, and then we will have that action take place into making a resolution. So when we're putting a resolution, if we want to make a resolution from the highest that we can, we have to make it in a positive way. I will do something, not I won't. Because I will is being substituted for something that wasn't done. So you're planning on doing something. Because if we just say, I'm not going to eat chocolate anymore, what are you going to place instead? So, you know, we need to do it in a positive, a positive way. So in order for the will to be effective in making a resolution, as we said, it must be done from the higher mind, and then this can be turned into action. But what happens if we don't keep the resolution? Nothing happens, right? No, that is very wrong. The importance of making a resolution from this higher place cannot be overlooked. It is imprinted on the Akasha, which is, we look at the astral as being sevenfold. Akasha is the highest, most spiritual realm of the astral. So when we're making a resolution from the highest realm, then we are actually imprinting that onto the Akasha. So if for ever reason there's a karmic reaction, this puts in forth a karmic reaction. So if somebody fails at this, this is a binding until death type of a situation, it will affect the moral and occult world, because we are affirming the will, and it actually says in the philosophy that we are improving ourselves, we are evolving. That's why this is the first one of this month. We are making a step along our spiritual evolutionary path. But we're looking, you know, if it fails, usually that comes from the lower nature. The success will come from the higher nature where we made it. And again, motive is the most important aspect when we're looking. Well, motive is important in almost any aspect of the philosophy that we read about. And we do have that interchange, and it is a nature of a true conversion. By breaking it, we weaken something in our psychic and spiritual nature. We are sinning against ourselves. So we have to look at this time of year and use it to our advantage, because we have that strong psychic and spiritual nature of the earth right now up until Easter. So we want to take advantage of that. And we want to read the Kuan Yin Pledge to start, because this is one of the highest, most spiritual pledges that we know about. And it says, "Never will I seek nor receive private individual salvation. Never will I enter into final peace alone, but forever and everywhere will I live and strive for the redemption of every creature throughout the world." So we are looking for a global idea. You know, we're looking to help not only our friends and relatives, but humankind, as well as the lower thank you.
Kingdoms,
the kingdoms and the lives that are in our bodies. So we need to think high thoughts when we're making our resolutions. And if anybody doesn't have one of these, we can get them at the book table. So we'll take any of your questions. Yes.
The theosophical axiom that we developed by self-induced and self-devised means, that is what helps our evolution. So we think that we need to have that desire first. That's the induction part. We need to actually see the reasonableness of acting for the universal good and not just for one's own self. Before any of these pledges or vows are made correctly, because otherwise we will end up ultimately in ruin, we think. So how do we see the reasonableness of these ideas? How do we induce before we devise, because we can't, if we just haphazardly, like was stated, it may be a fad to do something or another, and to just figure, oh, this looks good, I think I'll make this vow, that will actually weaken the will and be a detriment.
So basically, how do we go about making a higher resolution? And it was talked about using self-induced and self-devised means. And, well, just so that we all know, next week is the ideal and fact of human perfectibility, so we'll probably hear about that then. But it is necessary that we realize that we are spiritual beings. And we think from that basis, knowing that, and how we affect the lower kingdoms, and especially all the lives that are in our bodies, we impress them for good or for bad. And then when we die, those lives have been impressed, they go back to their constituent parts, either impressed for good or impressed negatively. So in order to get started on making this resolution, we have to have the foundation of that one thought that we are all perfect, that we are all have that capability of being perfected, and that we all are spiritual beings. And not just those of us in this room, but you know, people out on the street, you know, the animals, everything. We are all spiritual in nature, and we have to go from that premise. Yes.
Absolutely, but we caution the idea of going completely to a resolution of the highest we can imagine, because we're not fit for it yet, where we would be acting that way all the time. So doesn't it start with what we can begin to control within ourselves? I would like to say, I will help the world become more brotherly. But perhaps it's more reasonable to say, I will watch my temper this year and be as brotherly as I can to whomever I come in contact with. So yes, it's a global idea, but we can only act within our own sphere initially.
Mm-hmm.
And then keeping in mind, as was said, the highest, but it has to be a goal we think we can achieve as well, or we've already let ourselves down.
When we think of the highest, we do have to bring it down and make it particular to ourselves. And as was stated, it would be a change in ourselves. I will be more patient and make that into a positive spin and say, so that I can help my brothers in a better way. Yes?
Then in the long run, people are seeing this. And it is, in a way, spreading itself out from one to another.
Yes. When we make these changes in ourselves, people are going to notice. And if someone would normally like to get a rise out of you and you don't do that anymore, that's going to throw them off, put up, you know, and look back and think, whoa, you know, and maybe it will help them make a change in themselves. We do want Mr. Crosby says in the reading, then let us resolve one great thing. Resolve to know, resolve to think right and do right. Resolve to acquire some knowledge, and the knowledge of man as a spiritual being. So we can, you know, we can do the little steps, the baby steps, as was suggested, because we have to bring it down to our level. But always in the back of our minds, be thinking that it's for the greater good, even if it's making a change in yourself, because, you know, it can definitely, you know, like throwing a pebble into the pond, it can, you know, spread out all over. Yes?
Yeah. What I need to pull into this is when we're talking about for the greater good or it's what's the motive? Because when the use of will being all power. so much being all perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea there is the same resolution with a motive for a personal improvement is going to take a lot more effort to accomplish than that exact same resolution to be of benefit to others. Because depending on the universality within the universality of the motive, the higher the universality of the motive, the more will gets rolling. It's the difference between a steam shovel and a spoon, you know? So whether it's a small resolution, because maybe we think, well, I can't affect the world, but I can affect, you know, my world.
Mm-hmm.
Or whether it's something far beyond that, really what matters is the motive. And the motive is somewhere, so, you know, we don't know the real workings of it, maybe somebody else here can talk about it, but the motive is a key component, a key instrument,
mm-hmm.
in the directing of the force of will. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Agree?
Yes, the idea of motive, and motive is everything. And it's the strength of the motive will direct the desire, will direct the will. So the stronger our motive is, and as was stated, if we can't affect the whole world, in a way we can, because if we just impact our family, our neighbors, our friends, I forget what the numbers are, but they talk about how, you know, paying it forward, and how if everybody in here walks out onto the street, you know, with these wonderful thoughts, and they smile at somebody who is unhappy, that will make them feel better, and they can just, you know, it'll just keep going. We loved the movie when we used to have the movie nights here at the lodge. There was one that took place in India, and it showed this family having an argument before everybody went out to start their day. And they gave it two different scenarios. One where everybody left angry, and another where the family made up. And it just showed the difference in the travel of these emotions. So we can impact people depending on our motive. Yes?
I was just watching a film called I Am by Tom Shadyac. I think his first name is Tom, and his last name is Shadyac. He was a film producer in Hollywood. And he went to the Heart Math Center, and they took electrodes and they attached them to yogurt. Bowl of yogurt, and then he spoke. He wasn't attached to the yogurt or the electrodes, but he spoke. He said, "Okay," and there was a monitor on him. So if it moved too far to the right, that meant the emotion was negative. So when he said, "I'm going to call my agent," it went really negative. "I'm going to call my lawyer," very, very negative, almost off the charts. He wasn't connected to the yogurt, but somehow the yogurt, the electrodes attached to the yogurt, could pick up the negativity associated with that word, mm-hmm. and it registered. So if we're impacting what we might consider like an inanimate object or a protein or whatever like that, think of how we're impacting mm-hmm. each other by our feelings and thoughts and, you know, what we're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Well, the philosophy would say that everything is alive.
Right.
And even, this table is alive. If you take it down to atomically, you know, it's alive. So we affect everything because of that huge power that is in all humans. You had your hand up?
Oh, yes. I wanted to address the idea of the scale. When we speak of universal and then just ourselves, the first thing to overcome is your mind. If you can overcome yourself, everything else is open to you. During the revolution in Angola, they spoke to a woman soldier, and they asked her about her fear of this vast army army she was facing. And she said, once I conquered myself, there was no fear left mm-hmm. of anything outside of myself. So dealing with this first is the first step.
Yes, dealing with yourself, excuse me, is definitely the first step, because if we can't conquer our demons, then we're not going to be any good for anybody else. Yes.
It brings to mind the analogy of, we always say we don't go from selfish to selfless. We go from selfish to unselfish to selfless. That there are steps along the way, because as was stated, we're not quite sure what our motive is all the time. Mm-hmm. It's often in the results when we look at it, and I had no idea that was mixed in there. So it is a process. And we should make a resolution that we believe we can keep. It with the highest motive, it should be one we are able to attain.
Yes, it all goes back to motive. You know, how we can attain those lofty ideals. And we often think that writing something down makes it more concrete for us. We don't know if other people feel that way. But we just wonder about making a list and checking them and seeing, maybe just do one that we think we can attain. Because if we can keep a resolution that, you know, that's imprinted on the astral, and it would make us emotionally feel good. Oh, you know, I really, you know, I succeeded, and maybe that would help you to go on, so to speak. Yes?
Yeah, it's so interesting that the ideas that we share with each other, and hopefully with others when appropriate, when these ideas were first presented 100 and whatever years ago, they were so lofty, so theoretical, so, you know, you had to prove to yourself much more philosophically that so much of this was true. But today, with hearing this story about the movie with the yogurt, and the sense of conviction that it was explained with, mm-hmm. it reminded us the day before Christmas. You can make it so practical. Mm-hmm. The day before winter break at my school, I was talking to another teacher who I hold in very high regard. She's a really wonderful person in every way, and I explained to her the movie Messages from Water. And she listened and she smiled. And really, when I was done, her reply was, oh, I don't believe any of that stuff. Fine. But then I showed the movie to five classes of students. And it blew their mind. I mean, it was plain as day to anybody who watched that movie, the effect that we have mm-hmm. on so much around us. So isn't it wonderful that we do have these tools to use to demonstrate and to prove what has been known for so long? Mm-hmm.
Yes, and we shared with somebody last night about the book, The Secret Life of Plants, mm-hmm. which is the same thing, mm-hmm. you know, that they hooked up the plants to, you know, those machines and just thinking different things. You didn't even have to be in the same room. But that the plant, you know, reacted. So it is. There are areas of great nature that we have no clue. We can theoretically say, yes, there's atoms here, but who knew that yogurt had feelings? It's
well, it responds to feelings.
Responds to feelings. And we don't know if it's feelings that they have or not, but it makes a difference. It really does, how we approach things. So it is, it's remarkable. Did you have your hand up? Yeah. No? Okay. In the back?
Yes, and when you're making this list, we were always told less is best. Mm-hmm. Don't overextend yourself in too many places, because you're not getting a full force of mm-hmm. energy in any one area. So less is best.
Thank you. Less is best when we're making our list. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
I like some two things you said. I remember in 1990, I went to the VA hospital. This is Timon. I went to the VA hospital in Martinsburg. You know, going through a lot of changes with my war experience.
Mm.
And so this Dr. White came from the University of West Virginia. Given a class to a group, you know, on literature. And, you know. So when I got here, he asked me, like, why are you here? So to this day, I can't spell. I keep a speller with me. And I said, I would like to learn how to spell. And I said, all my life, I got some kind of block, I just can't spell.
Hmm.
He said, well, why do you want to spell? I said, I would like to write something down about where I feel. He said, that's right. I'm worried about a spot maker. So I started writing. So I started writing this thing about my life, and I started from my present thing, and I went and started working back, you see, with my life, you see, you know, where I was at, right? And in this process, doing this writing, I mean, I was messed up with about everything, about, you know, where I was brought up, this is my society, you know, my environment. And I started going back into myself, and I started meeting people within me. You know, you gotta remember, I was very prejudiced, I hated people, I hated, you know. And as I started taking this journey within, I'm going within, and in this journey, I met a girl inside of me. I said, what is she doing in here? You know, why is she here? And as I got into it more and more, I come to find out that she was part of me. She was a part of me, you know, I came from a mother and father. I'm not completely made up of one. We come from two, to one, you know. And I started looking at her, and I started seeing that she was the one I kept stifling. I kept cutting off when she said something, I stop. Shut up. Mm-hmm. How dare you speak to a man? You know, and I started listening to her. I started to become more compassionate about, you know, feeling and shit. And I started understanding a part of me. And then I continued this journey, right? And then I see a white boy. And oh my God, what is this? And I come to find out he was part of me. You know, he was a part of me. And when the Beatles started singing, I started patting my foot.
Yeah.
I look around and see if my homies see me to make sure that they didn't see me patting my foot.
So what we're seeing here then is we can look back and find out that there's all different, we have, you know, many different sides to us. And it doesn't matter. We hope that women need to have a masculine side and men need to have a feminine side so that we balance ourselves out.
And accept, exactly.
Thank you.
Yesterday, a neighbor who only lived maybe a year or less behind us was moving out, and you know, I had said hello to him a couple of times, and he says, you know, you're the only person who ever talked to me in this neighborhood. And I thought, wow, you know, like that's, I said, I just shrugged my shoulders and said, what can I say? I said, good luck, brother, you know. But, and I thought, you know, we need to try to spread joy and peace, but we each need to make that effort ourselves. And you know, we think he probably didn't make any effort on his own. If you're just kind of expecting it to come to you,
mm-hmm.
you're gonna feel isolated and lonely and possibly bitter. So we each need to make that effort.
Yes, we do need to put ourselves out, especially if we're in a new neighborhood. We don't know how that neighborhood acts, so to speak. So we do have to put ourselves out. And even at a new job or, you know, if we're meeting a new family member, you know, anything, we need to put ourselves out. In the back?
So it would seem that what was being described just there is an example of the more we use will, the stronger it will become, Whereas we know if we make these promises and break them, we weaken it.
Mm-hmm.
So using it, putting it into action thoughtfully, we imagine would be the way to strengthen it, which is a good thing.
Yeah. With the motive being the impetus behind this whole process, we do need to work it. It, because if we don't do anything with these thoughts, you know, it's not going to be any good. It's not going to be successful. Yes?
With the taking the chance that I might be stoned, once again, the best part of this season for me is always the showing of the different movies of A Christmas Carol. And when you speak of resolutions, I don't think anything can demonstrate resolutions better than that story. From the middle of it, where Molly says, he tries to seduce Molly into forgiving him by saying, but you were a good businessman. And Molly says, no, I wasn't. My business was the business of humanity. My business should have been the business of brotherhood. And then to the very end of the movie, where he has been completely transformed, and he makes the pledge, I'll keep it alive in my heart every day for the rest of my life. I will change. To me, that is like the very essence of a resolution that one would make at this time of year, and how it came about to really re-examine what you've done before and see the error in it, or see where the strongest parts of it, and build on that and shut and rest.
Yes, the whole review process is important, not only for the year, as we said in the talk, but at the end of every day as well. And we would hope that we wouldn't need the type of review that Scrooge had, but you know, we're all different. We all need different amounts of incentive in order to do that. Yes?
But maybe we can look at those spirits as being the mind, the higher mind, mm-hmm. saying, what have we done? How have we acted? More importantly, how has it impacted those we touched and those around us? And what will its future repercussions be? And it was at that moment with the future and the loss of the child because of his inaction that Scrooge actually transformed himself and decided this was his responsibility, and he fully took it on, as was just mentioned, and then moved forward from there.
Yes.
Well, when we think about, you know, all of this, it seems like the smallest act can have mm-hmm. big impact. So I think if we all think about, you know, if we act, which is hard to do, with complete integrity and all the little things we do in our lives, if it has, you know, it's like a wave, it definitely will impact. And just as everyone is saying, just starting there, because the smallest act has great power.
And it's interesting too, because last night there was a little 5-year-old with us, and he would periodically go up to people in the room and, you know, just be very one-on-one with them, and then he'd go to somebody else, but he really didn't know the effect that he was having. And if we can keep that childlike innocence, because we know that by the time we reach a certain age, some of us are more jaded than others about things. But then again, that's the power of this time of year. We always think, why can't this feeling at this time of the year carry forward? But this time between the solstice and Easter, this is the time that we can keep within us the feeling that comes around this time of year, and to bring that forward. Because, you know, we always think, you know, sometimes it starts at Thanksgiving, because they have, you know, all the turkey dinners for the homeless, and then they do it again at Christmas time, and the poor children get the coats and this, but why does it only have to be at this time of the year? So that's certainly something we can carry forward. Yes.
Another thing is, talking about a couple of years ago, it seemed like every time we go to VA hospital for a long time, something always happened. And I was, because I go into such deep, you know, and I was feeling so bad, I can't walk, you know, and I said, I wanted to come out of myself. So I told the people in my group, I said, I'm going to start this good morning campaign.
Oh.
So I'm going to start saying good morning to everybody in the hospital I see, right?
Mm-hmm.
It brought me out of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, I've seen guys that have been sitting around, look like they was in their own world for years, and after a while they start smiling. They see me come, they look up. I'm talking about a good feeling.
Yeah.
They would look up and say, you know, they're, and I said, well, you know, I took that to Downingtown, which is still where, you know, I have to come out to hospital. And then I bring it back here. It's kind of hard bringing it back there.
No,
but you can see the difference in the people.
Definitely saying good. You know, saying good morning, saying thank you.
Yeah.
We always use the example of the cashiers at CVS because sometimes they seem to be so sad. And they, you know, a lot of them don't make eye contact, but if you say, you know, thank you or good morning, good afternoon, that forces them to look up at you and to thank them. And if it's busy, it says, wow, you guys are really busy today, aren't you? You know, so it is, and sometimes when you leave, they thank you and they have a smile on their face.
Yeah.
So it isn't, you can pay it forward. You know, we can, that motive can be as simple as, I will say, good morning to everybody. Yes?
Well, one of the best examples of that is the doctor and clown, Patch Adams. Because he says hello to everybody, he's always energetic. And he's always getting it back. So we think that he's putting it out, but he's constantly getting it
mm-hmm.
back, too. And, you know, he's a doctor, but he uses humor in his medicine, and it does have a healing power. Compassion and humor
mm-hmm.
has tremendous healing power because it stimulates, you know, the growth or whatever. It just, you know, we're a little more higher than yogurt, so...
The Greek yogurt. But they have proven that humor helps your health. And it's good for your lungs, it's good for your mental state. So yeah, that would be great to have a doctor come in dressed as a clown.
From yogurt to yogi.
Yeah. Yogurt to yogi. So we'll just end with a wonderful quote from Magazine Theosophy 40. We have to find that motionless center of honesty with ourselves. And there, throughout the storms, whether of weakness, passion, guilt, or anger, cherish and increase the feeling of independence from all these oscillations. Here in the self-conscious integrity of the soul is the seed and the root of our salvation. Resort to this center, together with patience and the confidence which reliance on the law must surely bring, is the secret of our freedom, our strength, and our peace. Happy New Year.
Thank you.
The meeting's over.